ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music and more.
Joining us once again is Warwick Hadfield for Warwick's Weekly Wrap. He is look at everything worth knowing in the sporting world. Warwick, good evening to you. Welcome back.
Good evening to you, Philip. Yeah, it's great to be here, Philip. As it always is.
I know. Yes, well, exactly. Look, this Chinese swimming and doping story and WADA.
Yes.
I mean...
WADA.
I mean, really? Mac Horton's, yeah, really. Mac Horton is off his nut with fury. And he should be, shouldn't he?
He's not the only one. That's the interesting thing. I mean, he Mac Horton, of course, goes back to the incident with the Chinese swimmer Sun Yang. Mm. And that whole business where Sun Yang took a hammer to his sample. And, you know, there's two sides to that particular story as well. But because Sun Yang claimed that the representatives who turned up to take his sample weren't sanctioned. But, I've been covering this drugs in sport thing at least since 1988, when at the Seoul Olympics. When before the Seoul Olympics, I got a phone call from a bloke by the name of Phil Coles and another guy, Dr. Ken Fitch, and they told me, they said, a gold medalist is going to lose his gold medal at the Seoul Olympics. We're finally catching up with the buggers, he said, all the drug cheats, because, you know, this goes back to referring to the times of the East Germans and so on at the University of Leipzig. We're finally catching up to the buggers. And, of course, in the first week, a Bulgarian weightlifter tested positive, had won a gold and tested positive, and Phil Coles rang me up and said, told you so. Hmm. And Ken Fitch was on the phone not long afterwards. He's the IOC. He was then the IOC, or the Australian representative on the IOC Medical Council. And, of course, a week later, Ben Johnson. So they were on the phone again. Hmm. And for a time, it looked like the anti-doping movement of that time was catching up. But at the same time in Pusan Harbour was a Russian ship, and everyone said, this is wonderful, this is the sign of the Cold War really truly breaking. There hasn't been a Russian ship in Pusan Harbour since you know, the Korean War, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the damn thing was a laboratory. Mm. And what they were doing was testing their athletes. And if their athletes, they had exactly the same equipment as the IOC, and if the athletes tested positive, they pulled a hammy. Did something like that. And there was, in fact, I think there was an East German runner who broke three times in a race, so he'd be disqualified. So there was all this shenanigans going on. And since then, it's been this sort of a cold war of its own, where the anti-doping people catch up a little bit, and then the people, I mean, we had the Balco thing in San Francisco.
Yeah.
We had Lance Armstrong. We've had all sorts. But in the last little while... I don't know. Something's gone wrong at WADA. They seem to have lost...
This is the World Anti-Doping Authority. Yeah.
That's right. Mm. And they seem to have lost just what they're all about. And lack of
transparency. How can it be so hard? I mean, the thing that puzzles me about this, why is it so hard for an organisation that's not to be at arm's length and to have, you know, pretty set procedures? I mean, it's not... You know, I had to use the
arm's length
phrase. It's not rocket science, is it?
No, but the arm's length is shortened somewhat because they're funding. They're partially funded by the IOC and they're partially funding by anti-doping agencies. And it's been revealed in the last little while, nothing to do with the China 23 athletes, we're assured, but it's been revealed that China's contribution to WADA has been increased dramatically over and above what it would normally have to pay in recent times. So, and, of course, that was the same going on.
So
with
they
the
want they want, they want something for their money, do they?
Well, they've also got somebody now on the World Anti-Doping Committee and whatever. But look, just look in recent times at the lack of consistency here compared to what's happened. The Chinese were allowed to do their own investigation. That's Chinada or whatever it's called, the local thing. And they cleared the 23 Chinese swimmers of using this drug, TMZ. And then WADA just simply accepted it. Now, let's go back a little bit, about 10 or so years. The AFL Anti-Doping Tribunal cleared 34 Essendon players of taking any illegal substance. What happened? The federal government funded WADA's appeal against that to the Court of Arbitration of Sport. And that Court of Arbitration of Sport found the 34 Essendon players, despite no positive tests. The Chinese, of course, had positive tests. The Essendon players, no positive tests. And some would claim no evidence that any drug of any illegal substance was ever at Windy Hill or close by. Mm. The Court of Arbitration of Sport found 34 players guilty, and they were suspended for 12 months. And that was all funded by the Australian long-suffering, as he's known, if you want to use cliches, long-suffering Australian taxpayer. And Shana Jack was the same. WADA appealed against independent findings of her innocence twice. And now this one, the Chinese, boom, go straight through. You know, do not pass go, collect, no, no, pass, take, what's that thing, a monopoly? Anyway, take the $200 and go
through. Do not
through,
pass go, that's right. Yeah.
And it's not surprising that people everywhere are really upset. Now, Travis Trygart, who is the head of the US Anti-Doping Authority, I heard him interviewed on Radio National. Now, his track record's pretty impressive. He was the one who brought Lance Armstrong undone. He was the one who brought Balco undone, the Bay company, what it was called, that was supplying drugs to people like Marion Jones and so on. In fact, one of the people behind that was the bass player out of that old funk band from the 1970s, the Tower of Power. That was just an interesting sidebar. Anyway, Travis Trygart, they went after him. WADA went after him with his initially saying that he was doing this all politically. He was politically motivated and so on, because USADA and WADA have fallen out in recent times. But he just pointed out, all his beef was the lack of transparency. Why did it take a media report in Australia, a media report in New York, and a television documentary in Germany for this finally to come out? If it was all innocent, why didn't WADA go public with it way back when? And say, this is what's happened. It's all been, we've gone through it with a fine tooth comb. It's unfortunate. This stuff was in the cleaning or whatever it was in the kitchen, yada, yada. But having said that, you know, WADA hasn't not real good in the transparency department. Last Thursday on Radio National Breakfast, we broke the story that WADA had changed the way it was going to test for EPO. Now, you remember that was the one for which
that was the one that got Peter Boll. Exactly.
That's right. Now, Annika Wells.
Except that he hadn't, of course, but anyway, go on.
Of course. Yeah, Annika Wells, on behalf of the Minister for Sport, on behalf of all of Australians, asked WADA to go back and have another look at the way they did all this. And they did, but they made changes to the technical way they operated, but they didn't want to tell anybody. And it took a request from me to say, well, what's happening? And they finally accepted that as a result, was it a result of inquiries from stakeholders? There has been a look into it. It was just full of absolute gobbledygook. But they basically admitted that the whole process that cost Peter Bowles so much, the testing and so on, hadn't worked properly. And, of course, the other side of that story is, of course, Sport Integrity Australia being too zealous. I think they thought they're going to get a big name and get their names up in the headlines. And instead of accepting that there were problems with the way that they were testing for EPO, they were going to go after Peter Boll no matter what. And I think we're seeing that the young man's is not coming back. I don't think we're going to see him do anything special in Paris. I hope I'm wrong. But it seems that it's been such a shock to his training processes, and I think his mental processes, that it's gone. And it's not no surprise that David Howman, who I've called a gamekeeper turned poacher, he was the head of WADA, but he's now the head of the Athletics Integrity Unit. He said what happened to Peter Boll was a disaster.
Well, it's a disgrace, yeah.
It is. So, look, I don't know what I think it's almost got to the stage where you need to rub it all out and start all over again. Yeah. I think WADA has, I mean, it's...
What, is it just because they won't admit they're wrong, or is it because
that's a good part.
You know, they're concerned about offending national Olympic committees. What is it?
It's that. It's all of that. There's so much politics involved. Now, if we do go back again to 1988, there was enormous pressure. Ben Johnson tested positive. Yes, go home, Ben, never be seen again. But a very, very prominent American athlete also tested positive. And NBC, the national broadcaster, threatened to take up its bat and ball and go home. And of course, at that stage, NBC was the television rights were very, very important to the IOC. So that particular athlete was told to keep the gold medal and never darken the doors of the Olympic movement.
This is Florence Griffith Joyner, isn't it?
I'm not naming anybody here. But I do know that Dr. Ken Fitch, this wonderful man we've already mentioned a couple of times, rang me up and said she won't make 40. And a few years later, he rang me up, and he loves that word, all those words, I told you so. He rang me up and he said, told you so. I think that lady to whom you referred, I think 36 at the time of her death.
Her death,
And look, no. I mean, it, It's always there. And we talked about this last week, Philip, that the fact that for so many people to win a gold medal is their ticket to, you know, a fat superannuation check at the age of 30 for the rest of their days. Even the Eastern Bloc, it was, you know, you were made a major or a colonel or something in the army and never had to work again. And in the Western world, of course, all the corporate work is just endless. Mm. And, you know, let's think of another guy, poor old Alex Watson. He was found to have an excess of caffeine. He was going to win a bronze medal, and he was found to have this excess of caffeine. And then the Australian Olympic Committee, and I saw this, it was shameless. The day before, all the AOC officials were slapping him on the back and smiling, and, oh, this is wonderful. And then, of course, this positive test came, which turned out to be an erroneous positive test. That's a bit further down the track. And they sent him on a plane home. And he got halfway home and said, I haven't done anything wrong, and went back. And of course, all hell broke loose. And eventually, two scientists, I think, in Adelaide showed that the test that was used against him was totally flawed. Mm. And so it's a really tough thing to do. What happened to those kids at the University of Leipzig in East Germany, where they've, since then they've all had deformities, or their children have had deformities, that has to be stamped out. There's no doubt about that. But WADA, I think, has become bloated. It's become political. It's become full of chances and careerists and so on. And that's why I'm saying there's something needs to be really done, where someone needs to take to it with a scrubbing brush
all over again. A major broom. Yeah.
It's. I mean, this is. They've been embarrassed a few times in recent times, but boy, this is a huge embarrassment to just say. And given. Yeah, we've got to go back to, remember the allegations where there's the swimmers, I think it's 20 years ago, and the Chinese said, oh, no, they're not using drugs, they're having dog soup.
That's right.
And all hell broke loose about that. So it's hard, you can't suspend your disbelief.
No.
And we're going to be asked to do it again in Paris.
No, exactly.
Do you really think, it's, you know, every year we're asked to suspend our disbelief about the Tour de France, and we did. And of course, that all blew up in everyone's face as well, because Lance Armstrong was cheating, and you know, and the journalist who and Travis Trygaard who worked so hard using science and all the other things to finally reveal that he was cheating, they were treated with great contempt until eventually the evidence proved they were right. So yeah. it's not an easy thing to go into at all.
No. No, all right. Look, just moving on, the soccer, the Matildas, of course, will be at the Olympics. But the men's team, the Oli Roos, didn't make it. They couldn't score a goal. In fact, they didn't score a goal in the whole process, the whole qualifying
That's
process.
That's right. Nil all, 1-0 against them, and nil all. And look, there are a lot of people in association football, as it's also called, who think that the women get a free pass, give or take the odd vomit in a London taxi, while the men are critiqued and criticised forensically and unfairly. But you have to think that what happened in Doha didn't help the men's cause in any way. And I see that Football Australia, as they're going to do, are going to have a full and free and frank inquiry. And there are some interesting things that say, well, you know, they're up against it, the Oli Roos, the under-23 Australians. But some of that was of their own making, because they didn't take a man who probably would have scored a few goals for them. That's this wonderkin from Adelaide, Nestri Irinkunda. That's some mystery about why he didn't go.
There seems to be a total mystery about why he didn't go, because they didn't take him, but then late at the last minute seemed to extend some sort of offer to him.
Yeah, and he decided he was going to, you know, stick with his plans to go and play in Germany. And that's another thing as well. Look, a lot of Australia's best young players weren't available, because this wasn't an official international window, according to FIFA.
Mm.
So players like Alessandro Saccardi and Nicolas Bilev-Kapic, a whole bunch were unavailable to Tony Vidmar. So it makes it a little bit harder. I suppose the same would be applying to the Jordanians and the Qataris and the Indonesians, who ranked, I think, it somewhere around 100, beat Australia 1-0. There were some pictures I saw of the Australians just lying on the grass, their hands over their eyes. I mean, I don't think they could believe what had just happened to them. Mm. But we talked about this last week as well. You know, the Australians want this training camp, a dedicated training camp. Some people have already suggested it could be the AIS in Canberra. Graham Arnold's been pushing for it very, very hard as coach of the Socceroos, because he feels it's a great disadvantage to Australia not to have one. So maybe this will be, you know, this will, I mean, you know, it's the old handout thing. I'll need the federal government to do it. On the other, on the plus side, though, the Matildas are going to be playing another big tournament in Australia in 2026. It's their Asian Cup. So, and interestingly, Victoria, which claims to be the home of the Matildas with training centres and so on, didn't put in a bid to host any of the games. It's going to be Western Australia, New South Wales, and Queensland bidding to host all the games at a wonderful stadium in Perth. It's going to get a workout, I reckon, and I reckon they'll fill it as well. That'll be the
way
they go.
I'd be surprised if they don't. That's right. Well, Warwick Hadfield's with us. We're talking about the weekend sport. In the Australian game, Australian rules football, Toby Green is off to the tribunal. He's a big star. He's a big star for the Greater Western Sydney Giants. But people, he's controversial, I think you would say, Warwick.
Colourful.
No, I say controversial.
Look, he's...
I don't want to say he's an annoying player, but he can be.
Well, no, I mean, if you live in Victoria, it's almost like, you know, triple Brownlow medalist, you say annoying Toby Green. And he really has got up the nose of a lot of people in Victoria, mainly because he's so good. He is a tremendous player. In the last couple of years, he's kept a pretty clean sheet. He's been off to the tribunal on many, many occasions. But anyway, this latest one has got everyone, the tongues wagging for a lot of reasons. If he's been offered a 1 week suspension for rough conduct, it's one of those things where, you know, are you allowed to contest the ball anymore? You know, they're not allowed to be men anymore, some people are saying, and all these other arguments. But there's a little bit more to it than all of that, I think, because the week before, the tribunal let Charlie Cameron off, the Brisbane player, for previous good conduct. He'd played 200 games without anything. But all hell broke loose in Melbourne, because in Melbourne, as you would well know, any perceived advantage to the interstate sides is the cause of great hurt and heartburn and so on. And I think the tribunal will be aware of that as it hears this case against Toby Green and also his teammate Jesse Hogan. So I will be very, very surprised if they get off. But stranger things have happened in the AFL in my lifetime, that's for sure. But it all comes down to this whole business of trying to... It's the look. The AFL's always deeply concerned about the look. And if players do jump into other players and hit them in the noggin, I mean, it's partly legal. We've talked about this before as well. It's partly legal, and it's partly about, you know, wanting parents to allow their children to play the game and so on. So it'll be ongoing, and every time someone gets 4 weeks, they'll be all held to pay, and any time anyone gets let off.
Yeah, I don't know. There's no real answer to it in a way, because I mean, it's a full contact sport, and with no one's wearing any protection. So, you know, there's not a lot of answers to this. I mean, you can regulate it out of, you know, you can regulate your way to safety, but that would take away a lot, as people rightly think, of the nature of the game, which is physical contact.
Well, Jonathan Brown said in that slow, worn and bull way of his, it's a contact sport, you know. he takes a bit longer to get to his end of his sentences, Jonathan Brown, but it's always worth the wait with him.
Just before we go, Jack Robinson's won at Margaret River.
Yeah, look, I watched the final. It was just absolutely fabulous. He beat John Florence, who was a wonderful surfer in his own right, 2 years ago at this very venue in Margaret River. And he wanted to do it again last year. He wanted to win it again last year on his home break, if you like. But of course, he was out injured. And this time, he got a replay of the final. And look, it just reminded me of the song Southern Cross by Stephen Stills, where he says, spirits are using me, larger voices calling. And there was something very spiritual about what Jack Robinson did. The one wave, he got 9.10, and the way he carved it was... it was beyond just mere sport. It was something really special going on. And then he went to the air, which is one of his party pieces, and got 8. And then, as it does in surfing, that pops up what the opposition, the opponent needs. And it's John Florence needs a 10. Everybody just said, okay, Jack Robinson's the winner in Western Australia this week. And he's off to the Olympics. Ethan Ewan and Jack Robinson are the men's... representatives at the Olympics for Australia, and Tyler Wright and Molly Picklum. And which takes us right back to where we came in. Do you remember when they first had skating and surfing coming in, and yes. they all the surfers and the skaters realise they might be just subject to drug tests, and because there's a certain substance they like to, they like it. Anyway, I think they
get off the weed, guys.
They get off, get off the weed for the Olympics.
All right.
Yeah. Warwick. Anyway, so we leave where we started.
Exactly. Always great to talk, Warwick. Good on you. Thank you.
Good on you, Philip.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.